You've always had what it takes to make it happen, and we know the right tools can make it easier. At Strayer University, we're always thinking about new ways to set you up for success. That's why we give you a brand new laptop when you enroll in a bachelor's program, so you can start off on the right foot and keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Eligibility rules, restrictions, and exclusions apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. Yes, we recorded in Mompox, but we're loading everything up here in Bogota, Colombia. And this is episode 513 of the Colombia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest needs no introduction at all. It's Barry Max-Wills, the author of Better Than Cocaine, Learning to Grow Coffee and Live in Colombia. And for those of you who've been following the Colombia Calling podcast and projects of mine and my wife Alba's, well, you'll know we set up a small editorial company a couple of years ago, and Barry's book is the second book we have published, the first work of nonfiction in English. It's a memoir, his time in Colombia up to the present day. It's a charming read. We've been receiving dozens of incredible reviews on Amazon. Just check that out. 23 positive reviews, most of them 5-star. An incredible review from the Latin American Review of Books as well. You can find all these on social media platforms. So thank you to everyone who's been following us, who has taken an interest in our follies here in Colombia. This episode is a very relaxed episode. Of course, we'll come back and hit you with some hard episodes, hard topics, as the weeks go on. But it's nice to ease into the post-Easter holiday period with basically a conversation between friends. That's Barry and myself recording across the ether. He was in Bogota, I was in Mompox, and it felt like we were sitting there, couple of pints of the black stuff and just chewing the fat. And I think you'll enjoy that style of things this week as well. Thank you to everyone who continues to support us out there. That's, you know who you are, on patreon.com/Columbia Calling. If you haven't done so and you feel you'd like to help out the Columbia Calling podcast, well, you can go there and sponsor us a little bit per month and make us, well, very, very happy, Emily and myself. We'll be going over to Emily now with the news, but before that, some messages from our sponsors. So don't go away, and thank you for listening. The Colombia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your headlines for this week. Colombia's humanitarian situation has not substantially improved, according to the annual report by the Red Cross Committee, which counts 8 armed conflicts currently active in Colombia, up from 7 in the last report, now including the conflict between FARC dissident group, the Estado Mayor Central, and armed criminal group, the Clan del Golfo. In several parts of the country, the situation has worsened, the group says, signalling the Pacific region as the most affected by armed conflict. The Department of Nariño had 26,000 victims of mass displacement in 2023, accounting for more than half of the national total. The department also has the highest number of people affected by mines. Another major concern of the report was attacks on health workers in Colombia, 9 of whom were killed last year. Medellin's mayor is cracking down on sex tourism after a US citizen was caught with 2 children in a hotel room in the tourist area of El Poblado on the 28th of March. The 2 girls were 12 and 13 years old, discovered with American Timothy Allen Livingston in luxury hotel, the Gotham. Newspaper El Tiempo reported that there were drugs and used condoms in the room, and video footage from the hotel shows the girls counting money that Livingston had given them. The tourist zone of El Poblado in Medellin will now see a 6-month ban on sex work and changes to the opening hours of bars and nightclubs. Establishments will now have to shut at 1 a.m. for at least the next month, 3 hours earlier than the usual legal closing time. Meanwhile, the Gotham Hotel has announced its definitive liquidation and closure. Mayor Gutierrez has also made announcements about taking action against gentrification and the rapid growth of Airbnb-style accommodation. Although Livingston was captured and detained for 12 hours, authorities released him as he was not technically caught in the act of committing a crime. He immediately flew back to Florida upon release, though President Gustavo Petro has announced he will request his extradition back to Colombia for trial, and the prosecutor's office has asked for an international arrest warrant from Interpol. An investigation has also now been opened into the officers who released him. This week, I spoke to the chief of Medellin's Union for Sex Workers, Valerie Parra, and I'll be publishing an exclusive Q&A with her on my Substack later this week, which will also be sent directly to Patreon supporters of the podcast. Sign up to make sure you don't miss out. Meanwhile, the president has released the statistics on crimes committed in the first quarter of this year, which are substantially down from the same quarter last year. Crimes falling in number include intentional homicide, which decreased by 3%, theft, which is down by 23%, and kidnapping, which decreased by 53%. Extortion, meanwhile, rose by 7%. And Congress has shelved Petro's flagship health reform after a long and beleaguered journey for the bill. The president accused the senators who overturned the bill of receiving funding from Caralti, a multinational which owns one of the country's private healthcare providers. The president of Congress, Ivan Name, declared the statements inadmissible and divisive. This is Petro's worst political defeat to date, though a new health reform bill is reportedly already in process to be built from scratch and presented after July in the new legislative period. This has come amid a crisis for Colombia's private healthcare providers, which currently have collective debts to hospitals and clinics of more than 10 billion pesos. According to the Comptroller's Office, 16 of the 21 health providers do not have the financial reserves to legally continue operations. Colombia has operated since 1993 on an insurance model in which the state, as well as employers and individuals, transfer resources to private health providers, which then manage and administer health services for citizens in clinics and hospitals. This week, on the basis of excessive debt, the government intervened in the country's 2 largest providers, Sanitas, which has 6 million affiliates, and Nueva EPS, the largest provider in the country, with more than 11 million users. This means the state will now administer those companies and means effective control of those entities. Subsequently, on Thursday, Compensar, which has more than 2 million affiliates, requested voluntary liquidation, citing financial crisis. This means that, as of this week, the state is now responsible for guaranteeing health services for almost half of the Colombian population. The government already controlled 4 other providers, meaning that intervened providers now cover more than 24 million people. Some have interpreted these actions as government retaliation against the companies which opposed the health reform and financed opposition against the bill. Others have called it a backdoor way of achieving the reform and a form of nationalization which Congress itself had rejected. There is also concern around state capacity to manage these companies. Most healthcare providers which have been taken over in this way in recent decades have ultimately gone bankrupt and closed, generating an additional burden of patients for other providers. Petro assured that those providers will have a board of directors composed of clinics to whom the companies own money, as well as representatives of patients. A diplomatic spat broke out between Petro and Argentina's president Javier Milei after he called Petro a terrorist murderer. The Colombian government expelled several Argentinian diplomats and is demanding an apology, though both countries claim that the bilateral relationship is still active. Petro has said that he believes Milei is trying to destroy or postpone the project of Latin American integration. Argentina's relationship with Mexico is also currently strained after a similar exchange of comments between the country's presidents on X, formerly Twitter. If you're interested in the phenomenon of Javier Milei, also known as El Loco, this week my new interview with Valeria Brusco, Argentinian political analyst and polling expert, was published in Delayed Gratification magazine. UK and California-based listeners can pick up a physical copy, but if you're a Substack or Patreon supporter, you'll be getting it directly to your inboxes. And the International Monetary Fund has commended Colombia on its macroeconomic policies and frameworks, which have, they say, contributed to a marked reduction in imbalances despite a challenging environment. The IMF expects GDP to expand by 1.1% and inflation to fall to 5%. Those were your headlines for this week. Thanks for listening. If you value these updates or want them direct to your email or WhatsApp as audio and text every Monday, you can subscribe to the Columbia Briefing. Just sign up to my Substack at substack.com/@EHART, or you can sign up on the Columbia Calling Patreon site. That's all from me. Have a great week.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. I'm in Mompox, Bolivar. That's about 5 to 6 hours by land, south along the Magdalena River from Cartagena. My very special guest needs no introduction. We've been promoting him, well, without stop since the end of last year, because with my little publishing house, Fuller Vigil, me and Alba, we published his book, Better Than Cocaine, Learning to Grow Coffee and Live in Colombia. If you're watching on YouTube, there it is. You can see it. I've got a copy in my hand. So maybe we'll gift a copy to one of you out there. Maybe. Oh, he's got a copy in his hand as well, there in Bogota.
Of course, great reading.
Barry, welcome back. Third time on the Columbia Calling podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
The first time we called you the master storyteller. And then the second time, of course, we're promoting the book. And this one is an unashamed promotion of Better Than Cocaine, but I do believe in promoting the good things in life. And like you said in the book, all the bad things you hear about Colombia are true, but all the good things you don't hear about Colombia are also true. So let's talk about the good things. Well, first of all, how are you feeling about the book being out there in the market?
Well, it's very exciting. I mean, it's been 20 years in the making, more or less, and it wasn't going to be a book because it was my communication of the other side of Colombia to my readers, to the letters from Colombia. Hmm. But then, of course, I thought, well, and some people were saying, you should do a book, you should do a book. Anyway, that was in the making. But really to hold it, I remember when you took me to the printers, and it was the first one, and you took it out of the box and said, there it is, the first one. And I almost fainted. I mean, it was amazing. And I'm so proud of it. I'm so flattered, absolutely flattered by the reception of it and the wonderful things so many people have said, not just friends who could be being polite, you know, oh, yes, very good, keep up your day job, but these are complete strangers in other countries.
Yeah, it is incredible. No, I really thought when I was going to pick up the book, it's that Barry needs to come and pick up the first copy of the book. I mean, how it's, you know, it's a really momentous experience.
Well, I've given I took some up to Mykonos, and I've given one to Fabio, who doesn't even read English, and he was very, very chuffed. Bork Ivan, who does read some English. So these are the characters who are in there, even if only small parts.
Well, you got to do that. And I mean, we had a decent launch party last year. Hopefully we can do a bigger or, let's say, more vibrant event. We're aiming for a reading at the Bookworm Bookshop here in Bogota, hopefully this month or next month, I think. They're very keen. because the book sells well amongst the Anglophone community in Bogota. So we will keep your ears and eyes open, because we'll be promoting that everywhere as well. It will be a Barry will be reading, answering questions, I'm sure, signing, and just being charming, as is his wont.
I like one of the reviewers, Laurie from the States.
Oh yeah,
she said she knew nothing about Colombia, and she came here, and it gave her terms of reference and helped her understand her Colombian friends better. And like in paragraphs, so that'd be so hard to point. And then she finished off by saying, "P.S. You'll fall in love with Barry's life mate Adriana."
And you said, yes, I did. I think that was one of a very special one, especially, I think, you know, reviews from people you don't know, because it's easy enough for many people to load up reviews, you know, and sort of, but reviews that come in from verified buyers, so that's on Amazon, of course, from people you don't know that are 5 stars and are so sincere in that, they must really touch your heart.
It does. And I said to Adriana, look at this. She says, you'll fall in love with Barry's life mate, Adriana. And I said, well, actually, you'll fall in love with Barry's description of Adriana. And I said, it had reminded me a bit of Oscar Wilde. And I think it was a letter for introducing Francis Donaldson or Francis Richards to James McNeil Whistler. And the letter went, dear James, this is to introduce Francis Donaldson. She is a great admirer of your paintings. Well, a great admirer of my description of your paintings, which are every bit as good and often, I think, better.
No less. Let's look now at the phenomenal write-up that you were given in the Latin American Review of Books by Gavin O'Toole, Paradise Found. Now, if everyone hasn't read that, it is. I've passed it on to a few people, and they just said, "What a glowing review!" And I just think, you know, I could read the whole thing, but you might cry, I might cry, and it would be too long to read. But it's just, I keep looking at it, and it's like, it's just incredible. And if I read this paragraph as well, it's like, you know, in bringing Rancho Grande back to life, Wills and Zamudio, that's Adriano, display an intoxicating settler spirit, but of the best kind, to revive the land and unlock its fertile potential in a collaborative way that also enthuses those who have hitherto seen only limitations. It is the best kind of adventure, an exciting mission to build something positive from scratch. I mean, how amazing. I did not expect it to be that.
No, well, neither did I. One, and we don't know him, or I don't know him.
No,
he's not a friend of yours. He's a professional reviewer, or he's done this review. He knows Colombia. That's the other thing. He's not writing, oh, I'm just a fan from somewhere else talking about Exotica.
Yeah,
he's writing the subject, writing about a subject that he knows, and judging my description of it. And when you said crying, that's absolutely true, because when you got the review, you sent it to me, and we were at. We're in the kitchen at Mykonos. And Adriano, I can't remember what he was doing. He's just getting the dog food or something. I said, listen to this. And he said, what? And I said, review. And I read it out to him. And halfway through, I burst into tears. It's just because I was so overawed and flattered. And, you know, I thought, yes, it is worth it.
It is worth it. Look at this one as well. Is that, you know, when he talks about how Colombia is attracting international attention for the right reasons, its beauty, passion, and hospitality. And then the next paragraph opens up. The negative baggage accumulated by outsiders very much reflects the exception rather than the norm, he says, quoting a British expat who told him, everything bad that you hear about Colombia is true, but so is everything good that you never hear. Indeed, the title of the book is a play on this, with Wills noting that Colombia was much more famous for cocaine, guerrilla wars, kidnapping, random violence, murder, and mayhem than for holiday homes, health, and happy endings. For this stereotype-bashing reason alone, I would recommend that visitors to Colombia read this on the plane or pick it up at El Dorado International Airport upon their arrival. One hopes it is already on sale there. Better than cocaine is probably the best real introduction to the country and its people, written with both humility and humor, you are likely to find. I am trying to get the book into the airport stores. It is so difficult, Barry.
Yeah. It's a monopoly, probably.
Well, it is. And also, they only take books from like the a distributor. So I have to get through to the distributor. And I got through to the distributor, and they weren't taking any more books.
Oh, everyone's sick of books, are they?
Well, it's just like, apparently there's just so many books they don't want. But, you know, I will keep knocking on the door. If I have to take a box there and just bribe someone, I will
still
do it.
I know, but it is still early days in many ways.
Yeah, it's true. But that, I mean, you know, I think that the obviously the bookstore is in the airport is a key place, but that we are in a few. I mean, we are in the Fondo de Cultura Económica. It's a Mexican cultural center, but a huge bookstore in the center, in the Candelaria, in the Centro Cultural Gabriel García Márquez, which is, it's just a beautiful bookshop. They've taken a whole box.
Is that near the Botero Museum?
Yes, on the same street. Down as you go down the Botero,
down on the right hand side.
Yeah, exactly. And anyone visiting Colombia or visiting Bogota is going to be in the center. So drop by there, pick up the book. So that then they call me up and say, "Yeah, we sold out. We need another box." They've also, and what else? We are in Bookworm. We are in Prologo, which is in the Zona Hay as well, and we are in Dacha, which is in the Zona Hay, but they specialize more in Slavic and Russian literature. I think he just did it as a favor. Santo y Seña, I shouldn't promote them because they gave me the books back. They said that people complained about the title, but we always knew the title was going to be contentious.
It's going to be a bit of controversy because, yeah. Oh, why do you talk about cocaine when you talk about Colombia? But that's the whole point.
Yeah,
it's so much more, so yeah. Much better than cocaine.
And of course, we sold a good number of books at the launch party. And my friend Eric Taboni was picked up a whole load. He took them back to the US. So I'm waiting for people there to start reviewing as well. We need some more reviews. If you've bought the book, and I know there's more than 100 of you out there, because I know, please write a review. You don't need to have bought it on Amazon or on, you know, to go through Goodreads to write a review. That's the thing. And we are all indie publishers, and this is a new voice in literature trying to make headway.
Absolutely. And making headway with quality material.
There we go. Humility aside. So what's next then, Barry? I mean, you've got this. You're riding this wave of euphoria and obviously success, not financial, but literary. You are working on another book, I know.
Well, I have two books. One's a children's book and the other one is a novel. And mm-hmm. It's a novel because when you read what happens in it, nobody would believe it actually happened.
Okay.
But it did, all of it, and that's why it's a novel.
Is it the love story?
No, it's a thing of being not part of the status quo. It's I can tell you now, it's a young Colombian. That sounds a bit familiar. Who goes to London and gets a job in a restaurant, and it goes backwards and forwards between the seminary and the family and the prostitutes and all that sort of stuff into London with the immigration chasing foreigners and being treated like and the things that people do.
Mm.
And then of course, and it's a thing about if you play the game, you'll be okay like that.
Yeah.
But if you don't play the game, if you want to do it differently, you can have trouble or you can gotta create a new path which leads you somewhere else. But it's out of your comfort zone, basically.
But can we say it's the story of Adriano?
Well, no, it's a story about Francisco. But a lot of it's based on Adriano. A lot of it's based on experiences I had in London as well.
Yeah, sure.
And it looks at religion, it looks at food, and it looks at being different.
There we go. But if you're going to be different, London's a great place for it.
Oh, yeah, it is now.
Yeah, not previously. When did you arrive then in London, Barry, you know, to live?
January
85. Yeah. Would you say that was the end of like the punk era?
Yes, it was. The miners' strike was on at the time. Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting I know. One thing I thought was interesting, I was watching the television, and I think it was Neil Kinnock or something, went to Labour Party headquarters, and the miners were calling him a class traitor because he was, you know, he was being tough on the miners. And then at the same time, in the Evening Standard, Londoner's Diary sacked the guy who was writing it because he went to the wrong public school. Because they were all what were they? I can't remember. Either way, they were all Eton and he was something else, or they were all whatever. And I thought, look at this. On one side, you've got degrees of Labour, you know, being left, etc. And the other side, you've got degrees of conservatives, etc. You're not posh enough and all that. And that really sort of, when I started working there, I did quite well because I could walk and talk in a straight line. And a lot of these CEOs I was writing stuff for thought, oh, you're Australian, you know. You're not scared to smile or laugh. You're not checking out the little signet rings and things like that. They're not. I remember the CEO of what's the big airline company? The biggest in the UK.
British Airways?
No. Manufacturing planes.
Oh. British Aerospace.
Well, yeah, no, it wasn't. It's the one that's European. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yes, Airbus. their headquarters is at the big arch in Paris. But I remember the CEO had come up from the engineering floor, and my producer, client handler, was an old Etonian. And you could see them looking at each other across the table. So I had to be silly and make jokes to bring the temperature down.
Wait, all of these kind of hapless toffs, of which I am one, all of these hapless toffs now have ended up in my generation. Most of them have ended up either as, you know, city boys or estate agents.
Yeah.
You know, previously, just by virtue
working for Foxtons.
Yeah. Foxtons is a key for them. Which I found really interesting, because previously there would be, you know, directors and stuff just by virtue of the schooling. Where did you school? Just by virtue of that. But now they're kind of the sort of, I guess, the more the reasonably intelligent ones got to the city, and then the not so intelligent ones went to Foxtons. And then there's this whole weird gray area of ones like me who actually go out and have done stuff. You know, it's what people I'm in touch with are still those people.
One thing is interesting is that I'm not going to say who he is or what company or anything like that was, but he's an old Etonian. And he took me aside in Seville one day. We were doing a show, and he said, "You're gay," and I said, "Yes." He said, "I don't know what to do." And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Well, I want to buy an apartment, and I've got to have an HIV test, because that was the days in '85, etc. '86, it was all about that." He says, "Because I'm single, and I'm sure I'm positive." I said, "How do you know you're positive?" He said, "Well, I'm sure." And I said, "Do you have sex? Do you have sex with HIV characters? Do you take it up the ass and things like that?" And he said, "Oh, no, I always use a condom." And I said, "But they break." And I said, "Oh, okay. But I'm sure you're okay," because he didn't want to go to the family doctor, because the family doctor would then tell his parents. And I said, "But why are you so sure that they're all HIV positive?" He said, "All my friends are very rich, and they all have drug problems." So, and I thought, fucking hell.
A lot of that, still to date.
I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, God. Anyway.
Well, it's always the very wealthy, sort of the Marquess of Bristol and the Marquess of Blandford and all of those guys who filled the inside covers of tabloid newspapers in the 80s and 90s. I mean, true cocaine and heroin addictions and obviously scandals. But that was also the excesses of the late 80s and early 90s as well, wasn't it?
I mean, loads of money.
Yeah, I remember it all. Unfortunately, I was too young. for all of this. So you saw it firsthand. You saw it, I guess, and especially being in the writing industry, right? So you were exposed to this. So you should do a well, I'm sure the book's here somewhere. Jay McInerney's book, was it Fast Lights, Fast Times, the one in New York?
I haven't read it. Jay McInerney. Huh?
Yeah, it's in this bookshelf somewhere. So you could do your own reflection on that period as well.
That's funny. I remember also being gay was very sort of controversial then. A lot of people died, and I had friends in Australia who wouldn't invite me around to their house because I might infect their children. I said, I don't know what they're expecting me to do with their children. And I always remember I had one producer. She's very nice. She was an actress. And, hello, darling. Mm-hmm. All that sort of stuff. And they said she had a particular way of client relations. They said if she had another pair of legs, she'd open a branch in Birmingham. But she said to me, we were driving out to the client. She said, darling, are you gay? And I said, why do you ask me that? I was just wondering. I said, oh, why don't you ask me what religion I am? He said, well, that's not important. I said, it is if we're going to pray together. But she was an actress, and I hadn't hit on her. Therefore, she thought, got to be gay.
Yeah, well, you see that. But I think that, you know, if we come back to the book, it's the, you know, the better than cocaine, it's the acceptance with which you are received in Anserma, because here I'm in Montfort at the moment, and there's a, you know, I just by virtue of being here a long time, you realize who's who and what's what. There is a small gay community, and it's accepted as well. And I think despite the macho culture displayed in these small towns, there is a tolerance as well, which of course you've noticed.
Well, as I said, it's much more acceptable in Colombia than it was in Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, but that's not the important thing. I mean, I don't know about a gay community. I know about a community. And some people are gay, and some people are straight, and some people are Catholic, and some people are Protestant, and some people are atheists, and some people are black, and some people are, you know, they don't have communities. We all hang around and wear the same clothes or something.
Yeah. Right? Oh, we have a parade here, a small one. We also had Miss Gay Shakira in Montpos. Which I did not see.
Some of the wiggling bums.
I would presume so. We have a for a small town. I mean, we've got around 43,000 people, but inside the colonial center, it's only about, well, while the colonial center is like 45 square blocks, we only have about 8,000 people in that area. And so in the colonial center, I think there are about 3 trans people as well. So it's quite a high percentage.
Well, it's interesting. And I remember writing one of my letters from Colombia that 2 things were happening. One, a lot of Israelis were being beaten up in Medellin.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just finished their national service. They had money. They were good looking. They weren't scared of danger. I mean, good grief where they came from. And they were picking up all the girls, and the local boys didn't like it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is there were small groups of gays, drag queens or transvestites, not transvestites, they used to wear drag, and they used to go around mugging people because they were kicked out of their home. Why? Because they're too obvious. Yeah. And if you've got 15 children, there's a good chance that one of them is going to be a bit exotic. Mm-hmm. And as long as he behaves and does all the right things, et cetera, he'll look after mum and dad when he gets older.
Yeah.
But when they refuse to do that and they come out and mule tarty, et cetera, they get kicked out of home. So then they've just got to go around robbing people to live. It's okay if you've got a television show.
Mm. Yeah, of course. It's interesting you bring up Medellin. I was like, I will just drop in that I had a conversation just now here, before we got on the line, and it was the British consul in Medellin was here. First and foremost, I was like, well, how do you become, he's sitting here in a t-shirt and shorts. And
he's the one we met at Adriano's art exhibition.
Rupert?
No, Rupert Grant or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, anyway, so he was right here.
He was wearing a football shirt.
Yeah, well, he was pretty much in the same thing. And I was like, how do you become honor the consul? And he's like, well, they ask you and they say it's only about 4 hours a week, but I can tell you that it's a lot more than 4 hours a week because so many Brits are getting in trouble. And he said, you know, the levels of xenophobia increasing in Medellin right now, and of course it's all based around those people who behave in the most nefarious fashion. But also there is a drive by, you know, the far right guy, Fico, you know, saying no more sex tourists, but he's pointing at sex tourists being anyone that uses a dating app, which of course...
Well, you're blinder and things like that.
Well, you know, you well, are allowed to date.
Yes, I know, but interesting. One I saw a story, a headline today saying he's banning prostitution in tourist areas. So that's one thing I was saying. But the other was there's been a lot of killings in the end of last year, 8 of them, Americans and various others.
Boy.
And these were nearly always made connections through the dating apps and then led off to somewhere dangerous or whatever.
If I'm not mistaken, in the last several months, it's 16 foreigners, 11 Americans. If I'm not mistaken. But you see, the thing is, you know, I don't know how you ban prostitution.
Never have been able to.
No, I mean, and I don't know. Okay, so let's take it off. You get it off 10th Avenue and then Parque Lleras and El Poblado. Okay, so you sweep through there, which has kind of built a reputation almost around it. So where do? You push them into Laureles, I suppose, or downtown where it's rife?
Well, that's the question, I suppose, is can you make it safe? Mm. Because inevitably it involves leading someone into unforeseen place where there, you know, there isn't anyone looking, which makes them vulnerable for surprise attacks and other bits and pieces. Mm.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess he's got to get up and say something, but I rather him than me in that position trying to organize.
Absolutely. I see people saying I'd rather go to Pereira because Medellin is too dangerous and things like that. Mm. And then the advice there is don't do dating apps. Join a dance club. Join a pottery club. Join a conversational group. Meet people. Talk to them. Well, find out if you're attracted to them.
You mean like in old days? You were rather, you just met people.
Exactly.
What a revolutionary idea.
Absolutely. Do with people you like rather than some stranger that you've just got out of the ether.
Yeah, well, nice photo. And you know, we can doctor photos as well. Someone famously did so recently, but who shall remain unnamed. Someone famous.
I did a job for Visa once, and he was the president of Visa Security. And his presentation started with a cartoon. There's a PC sitting on a desk and a dog sitting in a chair, another dog sitting on the floor, and they're looking at each other. And the bottom line was, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
I think that's perfect. I think, you know, some great opportunities. It's so true. It's so true. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I could be seated here without shorts on because of the heat, but I do have shorts on. So there you go.
Tom Holland does that.
Yeah, Tom, the actor.
Yeah, Spider-Man. Yeah. I saw a thing, and he does the interview, but he hasn't got any trousers on. He's got socks because his feet get cold.
Fair enough. I mean, that's it. I've seen it in a hotel, a guy at the business center just wearing a suit and tie up top and then just some boxer shorts below.
That's what you're going to see.
Well, it's like, so long as he doesn't have to stand up and bow, he's going to be okay. But I'd say...
I was thinking of a film, The Bed Sitting Room, too old for you. Goes back to 1970. It was Richard Lester. And it was post-nuclear holocaust, etc. And had Peter Cook and Dudley Moore and all those various people. But it was the rest of humanity sort of surviving in a wasteland. And the BBC news was read by a man who had reasonably damaged dinner's jacket here, but then patters and crap, and he'd come and he'd kneel down behind the television, look like he was dressed in a dinner suit, read the news, and then go away.
Well, you know, I famously taught by my godfather just to iron my collar, my buttons, and my cuffs, and then never take my jacket off. And you know, I kind of live by it, but it does get hot and sweaty sometimes.
Well, I asked you if a t-shirt was all right.
T-shirt is fine. I'm in a sweaty t-shirt, and you can't see below my shoulders as well. The obviously maps, as they call them, underneath.
There's probably about 35 where you are. Where it's 18 here.
Yeah, it's easily 35 at the moment. But it's cooler today. We had rain yesterday for the first time in this year.
We had rain here, and we had rain at Mykonos, so that's good.
It's good because now the islands, the sandbanks in the river are covering up again, which will allow for travel on the river. Not yet, but in time for the groups that we bring up, the Magdalena from the center of the country, we will be able to bring them up again because it was becoming a real concern, a real concern. What's it done to the coffee?
Sorry?
What's it done to the coffee industry?
Oh, the coffee's crap at the moment. We didn't have a lot of coffee, and the price is rubbish. But it goes through cycles. I mean, when we bought Rancho Grande in 2001, it was at the bottom. It then went through a cycle, but we didn't know because we didn't have any coffee to sell. When we got to 2007, it was up, and we did very well. But then when we got to 2013 or 2012, it was down again. And then 2023, it was up again. So it just goes like that.
Isn't it? It's up and down. Yeah, it's a hard one.
But we do know that coffee is not going out of popularity. There is going to be a demand for it. So it's just a matter of being able to cope with El Nino, La Nina, all sorts of business.
Are you still bagging up the stuff, the Better Than Cocaine brand as well?
I don't know. I have to talk to Adriano. Julian was down here a little while ago. He wanted Marcos Suarez, is it?
Yeah.
He's got the coffee gourmet shop at the gallery where Adriano's exhibition was on. And he says it's great. Definitely. I don't know. I haven't had any because we haven't got a coffee grinder here.
So you don't get high on your own supply at home?
No, but we give it to people we like.
There we go. I think that's perfect. I think it's perfect. Well, you know what? I am, coming back to it, I am so proud of this book. I am genuinely flattered as well that you would have gone with a fledgling publishing company and feel immensely indebted to you for the confidence. So thank you.
Well, I could quote Oscar Wilde. I have very simple tastes. I'm always satisfied with the best.
That's very kind.
And I also believe in quality, and you are true quality, and that's why I had no doubts whatsoever.
Yeah, well, anyone out there listening, the book is online, available on Amazon if you are overseas, so not in Colombia. You can get it on Amazon as a print on demand. You can get it as an ebook. If you are in Colombia, we do sell it directly. You just get in touch with me through any of the social media platforms. I will ship it for free within Colombia because, you know, that's the nature of the beast. Or go to one of the bookstores I've mentioned, so that's Bookworm, Dacha, Prologo, and the Fondo Cultural Economica, Gabriel Garcia Marquez Center.
But, easy for you to say.
Oh, it's a mouthful. but also, what I want is anyone with connections to bookshops in the Anglophone world, England, you know, Great Britain, Australia, Canada, the United States, and indeed literary magazines who can help us out. Just help a fledgling company, indie publisher with an indie writer, with some indie love, please. That's what we need. That's what we need. You know, just to keep on, was it keep on keeping on, really? It's just to keep on pushing out there to the limit. So I'm really, this is a call to action. And I would like to say, I will gift a copy of this book. Who should we gift it to? It should be a competition, Barry. How should we do a competition? So someone wins the book, a copy of the book.
Oh, beats me. Thanks for the warning.
I don't know. Let's say if people write in, let's say people need to write to me somehow, platform, doesn't matter if it's Twitter, if it's Facebook, directly on email,
Instagram,
write to me here. And write why. We'll write to Barry's Instagram. You can find that easy enough. And the one with the best reason as to why they should be given a book, as chosen by Barry and myself, will get a copy of the book. We'll give you a couple of weeks. We'll give you a couple of weeks to get it. You will win a copy of the book, and Barry will sign it.
I will sign it. I promise you.
Exactly. I know. So that's how we'll do it. We'll do it on that response. So no, only the people who've listened to the end of this show will know that that's on.
Because the interesting thing as well is I've got various friends, relatives, and strangers in Australia and other places, and they've bought the book. And And they say, I didn't want the electronic book. I wanted the real book. And now you can sign it when you come.
Yeah. Yeah, well, fair enough. So there we have it, everyone. Better Than Cocaine, Learning to Grow Coffee and Live in Colombia by Barry Max Wills. Available to win. So write a reason as to why you should be the person who wins a copy of the book.
It's also available to read.
To read and to buy. Barry, thank you so much for your time. This has been an unabashed, unashamed promotion, but that's so it should be. We've covered a lot.
We have. It's a very colorful background, don't you think?
Yeah, I can see Adriano's work behind you. I've got prints bought from Portobello Road, the Portobello print shop here behind me. So there you go.
Just one question. How was Semana Santa?
It was good. Interestingly enough, we had very few people from Bogota and very few people from Medellin. And we can see that has been a tendency. They're traveling close by. That's due to a global, crisis in terms of sort of cash. And so I think most of Bogota must have gone to Villaleva and Girardot and places.
Melgar.
And most of Medellin. Yeah, Santa Fe, Jardin, places like that. But
it's apparently, Popayan is very big.
Hmm.
And I think Jardin or Jericho.
Yeah, Jericho, I think. But here, I mean, we're always full. I mean, we're always full for Semana Santa. But what we saw is an evolution in the people, where they're coming from, because people from the Caribbean coast, like, excluding the major urbs of like Santa Marta, Barranquilla, and Cartagena. So more, if we go more west, the departments of Cordoba and Sucre consider now Mompox as their weekend destination. So a Bogotano considering Villaleva or a Paisa. Yeah, considering Santa Fe de Antioquia. So we're getting more people from that region. And I'm more than happy to receive anyone. But it's fascinating to watch the evolution in the clientele.
Well, we have a friend of a friend. She's 29, Canadian, lives in Costa Rica. Father lives in Costa Rica. She's a digital nomad. She's in Medellin. She's flying up to Pereira on Monday. Tuesday, staying with us one night and then going off to Bogota Wednesday night. But she wanted to come and see Coffee Country. Yeah. And she's so excited about the book, I might even give her one.
I'm very careful about giving books away. Friends and so on should support.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. If you're in the book, I'm happy to give you a copy.
All right.
I'm even happier if you're in the book in another country and you get your own. Then I'll come and see it.
There we go. Well, Barry, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your patience.
Patience? What patience? I've got two children. I've got oodles of patience.
I saw you throwing them around the pool.
I did throw them around the pool. It wears them and me out.
Well, you're looking very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Barry. Thank you for everything. My kindest regards to Adriano, and onwards and upwards selling the book.
And we'll see you when you come back to Bogota.
Indeed. I'll be back there in a few days. So there we go. All right.
I'll be in the bush. So.
Okay. Well, sooner or later. And we'll get in touch about the book reading. Everybody, watch this space. Thank you again. This has been Columbia Calling, talking to Barry Max Wills. Bye-bye. The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website, that's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Columbia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolumbia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolumbia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
Con la luna, habla con la playa.